I would like to convene this meeting of the Lincoln County Board of Commissioners. Good morning. It is Wednesday, September 14th, 2016. Commissioner Hunt is absent, but Commissioner Thompson and I do constitute a quorum. Our first item of business, a resolution proclaiming the month of September 2016 as National Recovery and Well Variety Month in Lincoln County. I'd like to invite our presenter to come forward, and while you're doing that, I will read this resolution. Whereas recovery from substance use disorders is possible through a variety of treatment resources and recovery support programs, and whereas in Oregon, people with substance abuse issues and or mental health conditions die 34 and a half years earlier than the general population, and whereas thousands of people across the United States are living happy, healthy, and productive lives in recovery, and whereas stress can contribute to substance use disorders, and finding a positive outlet for dealing with stress is crucial as people continue to face stressful situations in their lives. Whereas nearly a quarter of U.S. adults said they were under extreme stress in 2015, up from 18% the year before. Average stress levels in the U.S. rose from 4.9 in 2014 to 5.1 on a 10-point stress scale. And that's from the American Psychological Association Executive Report of March 10th, 2016. And whereas Lincoln County residents report experiencing 4.2 poor mental health days in a month compared to the state average of 3.3 days, additionally, 18% of Lincoln County adults engage in excessive drinking, which is defined by the CDC as drinking 5 or more drinks on occasion for men or 4 or more drinks for women. And whereas substance use disorders are treatable yet contribute to a serious health care problem, and our community must take steps to address it. And whereas educating our community about how substance use disorders affect all people in the community, including public safety officials, the workforce, older adults, and families, therefore is essential to combat misconceptions associated with addiction. Whereas to help more people enter a path of recovery, achieve long-term recovery, and learn how recovery positively benefits well-being, the Prevention Coalitions of Lincoln County, PODA, and CEDAR, together with Celebrate Recovery Walport, Sletz Tribe, Seashore Family Literacy Center, Lincoln County Health and Human Services, and many other local treatment and recovery support organizations, invite all residents of Lincoln County to participate in events to celebrate recovery and well-briety during the annual 2016 National Recovery Month, including the 8th annual Hands Across the Bridge event on Saturday, September 24th, 2016 at 10 a.m. in Waldport. Assembly begins at the Alcee Bay Interpretive Center parking lot, 620 Northwest Spring Street, Waldport. A recovery well-briety celebration will follow the bridge event from 1 to 3 p.m. at the Seashore Family Literacy Center, featuring live music, food, activities, and much more. Now, therefore, we, the Lincoln County Board of Commissioners, do hereby proclaim September 2016 as National Recovery and Well-Briety Month in Lincoln County and encourage citizens to celebrate recovery, spread the word, and support these community efforts and events. Join the Voices for Recovery, our families, our stories, our recovery. Good morning.
Morning.
Introduce yourself, please.
My name is Rick Booth, and I am celebrating recovery in Lincoln County, and I'm the Oregon State Rep. And I'm here to thank you for the proclamation. I do have one correction. I just read that. It's 11:30 to 3.
11:30 to
3. Okay. Starts at 11:30. Hands Across the Bridge has been going on for 12 years now. It started in Portland with a couple ladies up in Portland and Vancouver. And it's an event that goes on across the state. 8 years ago, they started set Hands Across the Bridge here in Newport. And it's called the Warren Atkinson Jr. Memorial Hands Across the Bridge. It was a young lad that died from a drunk driver. And so our event 3 years ago came down to Walport. We have a bigger bridge, so it kind of makes it nice for safety. We come together with all the recovery groups that we can bring together to just celebrate recovery. This year, we're contacting everybody. And anybody that hasn't been contacted by me, please get a hold of me. I'd love for to hear from you. And it's a time for residents to come together. The national slogan this year is what that bottom part was that you read, Bill. Our families, our stories, our recovery, and it's families. That's who gets affected most by addictions. And as I talk about in Celebrate Recovery, I didn't start out an alcoholic when I was born. I came into an environment that conditioned me for the years that I have walked the face of the earth, and I don't fight it. One of my two hurts is perfectionism and control issues. I learned that long ago, and I still walk with that today. So it's a chance for people to come together and understand that we all work together. In my world, I don't work the clinical side. I work the support side. And it's not only Celebrate Recovery Walport, it's Celebrate Recovery for the country. There's 29,500 churches that do it. We just have four of them in Lincoln County. And I thank you for the proclamation.
And thank you. Comments or questions, Commissioner Thompson?
No, it's such a big challenge around here. It seems like we have a higher rate of incident. These kinds of problems, so anything we can do to support sobriety and abstinence of these kinds of things, I think is positive.
It's a huge challenge. I mean, last year the State Mental Health Directors Association did an assessment of our treatment capacity in the state, just looking at the 25% of Oregonians who receive service through the Oregon Health Plan. And one of the things they found is we've only got 50% of the treatment capacity that we need. And yet, to get that up closer to 100%, that's going to cost money. But on the other hand, I mean, in terms of the societal costs to not dealing with it, I really think are greater in the long run. So I love helping you publicize events like this to keep telling that story.
Thank you guys so much. We appreciate it.
You bet.
I'd like to make a proclamation the month of September 2016, the National Recovery and Sobriety Month in Lincoln County.
And I'll second that motion. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. It's approved. Thanks, Rick.
Thank
you. See you on the 24th. All right, next up we have the adoption of the consent calendar. These are either routine items or items that we have discussed at previous meetings. Is there anything that commissioners or staff would like to remove or highlight? If not, I'll entertain a motion.
I make a motion to adopt the consent calendar.
And I'll second that motion. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. And it's approved. We move on to decision and action items. Jerry Herbage is going to be presenting a series of resolutions. We are dissolving some special districts today. And Jerry, if you can just kind of walk us through what we're doing here and why, and then we'll see if Commissioner Thompson and I have any questions about it.
Thank you, Commissioners. Wayne, we do have four items before you to initiate dissolution of four different special districts formed under ORS Chapter 198. They could be grouped together so that the first two have much in common and the second two have much in common, and I would like to go through them. One thing, you know, projects are always a team effort in this county as elsewhere. And Wayne and I have been working with Eli Adam, who has done some maps for us that might be helpful. I have maps for each of the four districts, and I'd like to present them to you. I'll hand them to Wayne, and then they can go forward.
So, Jerry, let me ask you a question before we get into this.
Yes.
Dissolution is a lot rather different than formation.
Yes.
So, I mean, we don't need to get too detailed into dissolution, but I'm going to ask you one basic question of all of this.
Yes.
Is there any opposition to dissolution? That you've heard?
Not that I've heard.
That's good.
Yes.
Okay. So,
I think that's a very good question, and I think that to me, these resolutions being presented to the board are a form of housekeeping.
Right.
Events have happened that I think you're generally aware of, the community is aware of, where these districts are no longer functioning, and so we need to clean up. And in that regard,
we don't get complicated into this.
Yeah, I want to thank Wayne, because Wayne has in mind certain projects, especially since my coming here, and we're cleaning this up. We're going to do more. You're going to have another one. I know Coronado Shores is going to come up. We will have, we're just going to do a cleanup, and so I think that'll be helpful.
So we hired you for the county janitor.
legal janitor is one of the things here.
Batty cleanup is the baseball analogy.
There you go.
That's a good point. Let's take the first two. You have resolutions for Olawa Sanitary District, and I think that's what the letter from the state says. On your map, it said Olawa Acres or something like that. I don't think that's the correct name. I was just up at the clerk's office to double-check on that. If we need to, we'll amend. But I'm quite certain that it's been under Olawa Sanitary District. And then you have another called Sala C Sanitary District. I'd spend a little bit of time up at the clerk's office looking at the old files. I think these districts haven't been functioning for decades, actually. And so this truly is a cleanup. In that regard, what frequently happens, so we'll get a letter from the Department of Revenue, and that happened, and that's referenced in your resolution. It happened for both of these districts. And it's saying, well, you know, these districts haven't been sending in their financial reports, which have to go to the Department of Revenue. And so that didn't happen for three consecutive years. It probably didn't happen for, for many, many years. And so we get the letter. And actually, the letter from the Department of Revenue directs you as the Board of Commissioners to initiate dissolution procedures. Now, one thing I want to make clear is that in Chapter 198, which is probably the worst drafted set of statutes that you'll ever find, is that there are separate procedures for this kind of thing when you're not filing your reports, as opposed to other forms of dissolution when, well, it relates to the river's end. And so that's a different set of, you're kind of getting to the same place, but the statutes and procedures are different. So, under this statute, you're obligated to initiate the procedures to dissolve. And so I'm asking that with respect to both the Olawa Sanitary District and the Sala C Sanitary District, that you initiate those proceedings. In these resolutions, you would direct me, and this isn't exactly the way, I mean, this is perfectly fine under the statutes, but it's sort of like, given the unusual circumstance of not being active for decades, I think we agreed we'd send a cover letter with a signed copy of the resolution to every the address of every known resident and homeowner within the district. I think that that would be good for due process. Just, you know, if you asked if there would be any complaints, you know, that, I think this is a way to handle, make sure everybody's
so
aware.
So again, a procedural comment. Wayne, is this one that we handle each of these individually, or do we handle them as a group, or do we split them into two sections?
We should do each one individually. When you're making the motions, tell them individually.
Okay.
And then what I will do, Wayne is assigning this to me, you need to have a financial statement submitted, and so I will put that together, and I will do that in both. So as if you have any questions, let me know. But as Wayne indicated, you can make separate motions on these two. They're basically the same sorts of things. So
let's do the motions on these two.
Okay. Can I make one comment, sure. Please? Just, yes. Just because Jerry did one other thing for me. Because with these old districts, it's, sometimes the districts don't file the financial information, but they still may be in operation, may be doing things, just not doing things according to oil, so to speak.
Yeah.
And so one of the things that Jerry is confirming is, you know, these are sanitary districts, so we're making sure there's no sewer systems out there, or remnants of the sewer systems, and that they have septic you know, that's what they're actually utilizing for waste disposal out there. So we're doing a little bit more due diligence to confirm everything. That'll be part of the process.
Okay, shall we take the first two?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'd entertain a motion on the resolution initiating procedures for the dissolution of the Olalla Sanitary District.
Okay. You're going to make the motion?
No, I will entertain the motion.
Oh, well, I'll make the motion, what you just stated.
And I'll second. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. And now I would entertain a motion initiating procedures for the dissolution of the Salasi Sanitary District.
As he said.
And I'll second that motion. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay, on to the next two.
Thank you. You have the Roads End Water District and Roads End Sanitary District. I gave you maps of those, and what you'll notice is that the boundaries of the districts are almost the same for both, but they're not exactly the same. But they do arise out of the same circumstance. And I think this board is very aware that in 2012, Lincoln City adopted an ordinance, it was 2012-10, which annexed almost all of the properties in both of these districts and declared, you know, the withdrawal of the property from the district, and so they went into the city. Wayne and I had discussed this. There's a statute in Chapter 222 that makes it so clean if everything gets annexed. But when it's not like that, then it doesn't happen by operation of law. It requires a little bit of extra work, maybe a lot of extra work, from the county and the Board of Commissioners. And so that's this case. And so we did some research, and, you know, if you look at this, what happened after the annexation is that... there was almost nothing left. There are like three houses in each district and two electors. So under the parlance of the law, we call that uninhabited, even though there's a couple people there. It meets the definition of uninhabited. And in both of these districts, there haven't been elections. So following the annexation, there was some litigation, which everyone's aware of. It got resolved. I think, and again, we'll do the due diligence and we're going to track everything. I think the county has some of the money, but basically money, you know, it got turned over, the assets got turned over to the city, but, you know, we will give you a report on that and we will follow up on what may be, what, if anything, is remaining. No board members have been appointed or elected to fill vacancies because either everybody resigned in the one or... they didn't do anything on the other. And these, none of these districts, so you asked about, and it was a good question from Commissioner Thompson, you know, I don't think anybody's going to complain. These districts haven't been active for more than 2 years. And so we need to do some housekeeping. And even if they were active, there's almost nothing left of them to be active. It's kind of a funny situation. So the board has the authority under a separate set of statutes to initiate proceedings to dissolve, and you can do that in this case because there haven't been regular elections, and because the property is uninhabited. And so, and if you make the finding, which is in these two resolutions, in the best interest of the people, that the districts be dissolved and liquidated, then we can go ahead and move forward with the resolution. This resolution asks that you, as a Board of Commissioners, act as a Board of Trustees on behalf of the district. It gives direction that you're going to file with the Lincoln County Clerk, and we will... I won't do the footwork to get this done. There's findings that are required, as well as a plan of dissolution and liquidation in each case. Okay, so this is something that goes on my project thing to timely get this done and get it back to you. The documents that we come up with will be available for inspection by any person. In all instances where you have dissolution, there are sequential steps. They all obviously begin with resolution to initiate the proceedings, and that's what we're doing today. I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have. You have the maps of the remaining properties of the district. I think you can see that it's very little property that's left.
And just one more comment, yeah. Just again, along the lines of service out there. As you recall, roads in both the sanitarium and water districts never were purveyors of the service.
Right, they were contracted
with the city of Lincoln City, who provided all of the systems in here. So, you know, they were shells basically to provide a mechanism to contract with the city and provide financing for some of the activities. That's what we're doing here. So, in each of these cases, either the area gets serviced someplace else within the district, or they're still contracting with the city.
And do I understand that if at the end of the dissolution process it's determined there are any assets left, they get turned over to the city in the case of both of these districts?
Yes, and we do know there are some assets because there were some taxes that were collected at the very end that weren't utilized by the district, so we know we're holding some in trust.
Okay. Have you been in contact with the city attorney for Lincoln City, Richard Apicello, on this? In fact, I think Wayne talked to him earlier this week. I talked to him. We've been in touch over the issues. They're very happy that we're moving along with this because it's housekeeping, as they said, that needs to be done. It's a good thing, in my opinion, for the county to be cleaning up these things.
Any further questions or comments?
No, I want to make a motion.
Okay, this is a motion to dissolve the Roads End Water District.
I'll do it this way. I'll make a resolution. I'm going to make a motion to pass Resolution 16149D and Resolution 16149E to dissolve the Roads End Water District and to dissolve the Roads End Sanitary District.
I'll second that motion. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Thanks, Jerry.
Thank you very much.
Alrighty, now we move along to discussion or information items today. So we're at reports. Place-based water resources grant program, and invite our presenters to come forward, and we will move on to this agenda item. Morning. Introduce yourselves. Good morning, and take it away.
I'm Tim Gross with the City of Newport. I'm Director of Public Works and Harmony Burright with the Water Resources Department. And the reason we wanted to come and speak with you today is because we've had some informal discussions with different members of the county about the place-based planning initiative that had been convened by the City of Water Resources. But we felt it was important for us to speak before the commission to kind of give you the dog and pony show, if you will, about what these planning exercises are all about, what the goals are, and then what some of the future scheduling is going to be. I'm going to turn it over to Harvey to begin.
First, I'd really like to thank you for having us here today and giving us the opportunity to present this to you. So just a little bit of, I'm going to kind of start with some background to orient you, and then we'll get more into what we're doing here on the Midcoast. This really has to do, if we go back to 2012, we were, as a department directed by the legislature, to think about how we could start breaking down the silos that have emerged between state agencies, especially as it relates to water resources. How can we be working together more effectively and assisting communities in a meaningful way to address their in-stream and out-of-stream water needs now and into the future? So really taking a more strategic approach to how we are managing our water resources. And this is a statement made by our Water Resources Commissioners that 50 years from now, they'd like to see, you know, clean, abundant water to meet these multiple uses. Realizing that, you know, if you look at this handy-dandy little image here, you know, water is very interconnected. It doesn't respect boundaries. And when one person uses water, it has impacts to many others. And so how can we essentially foster more cooperative approaches to addressing these integrated needs? So over the course of 4 years, we did extensive public outreach, worked with statewide stakeholders, local groups to develop a statewide strategy. It's a very high-level blueprint for how we can better address the state's water needs. And one thing that emerged from the public process was that every place is so different. Every place has its challenges, but they're so unique that it's hard to really capture at a state level what the state needs to do. And so out of this planning process, the statewide planning process, we really identified the need to do this same kind of integrated planning at the local level so that communities could articulate their water needs to state agencies who then could develop a more nuanced strategy for how to meet those at the state level. So in 2015, not knowing whether or not this would be a successful proposal before the legislature, my predecessors worked again through extensive public outreach to develop this set of draft planning guidelines. And this was really based on feedback from communities that have gone through planning processes, looking at other states to glean lessons learned, so looking at Washington and their planning efforts, Texas, California. And what we developed was really a set of core principles. You know, the planning guidelines are fairly broad because we want to be able to maintain that flexibility and adaptability. But the core principles are that this is a voluntary, non-regulatory approach. This is not a means to setting or enforcing regulatory standards. And it's not anything that can encumber, you know, someone who's not a part of the process. It's locally initiated and led, realizing that, you know, communities are they know best what they need, but state agencies can be in a really good position in a partnership role to bring resources and information to the table. It needs to include a balanced representation of interests, you know, bringing together both those that are interested in in-stream, meeting in-stream needs for fish and wildlife, you know, cultural, spiritual, as well as out-of-stream needs for industry, municipalities, agriculture. And so you need to have those voices around the table to allow for a truly collaborative effort. And then it needs to follow hydrologic boundaries. You know, it needs to take into account kind of this basin or watershed scale approach. And then again, in partnership with the state. And so the communities are really kind of helping the state understand how to best be involved in this integrated collaborative effort. And then there are five planning steps. And again, these are very high level, and they get more at the core principles. The first step is build a collaborative process. So the key here is it needs to be integrated. You need to be thinking about in-stream, out-of-stream, water quality, water quantity, and then also habitat. So how are all these things connected? And then how are you bringing the right people to the table to have the right conversations about how these pieces are connected? It needs to be open and transparent. The public needs to be aware and involved and informed, because a lot of this, you know, anything that we do ultimately is going to, you know, involve a lot of people. Then the second planning step is characterizing the water system. So let's get an idea. We've gone through many, many planning efforts. You know, municipalities have gone through planning efforts. Counties go through planning efforts. State agencies go through planning efforts. So let's not reinvent the wheel. Let's just, you know, collect what we have now, understand our current information, what do we know about the system, and then identify information gaps. And these information gaps, then developing a strategy for how we fill those. Is that something that state agencies can do? Is that something we need to, you know, engage a private entity to do? But, you know, what's our strategy for filling those gaps? And then how is water currently being used, and how do we anticipate it will be used into the future? So at the state level, we did a demand forecast that looked 50 years into the future to kind of estimate what the municipal and agricultural demands would be. And we hope that through this effort, we'll kind of get a baseline of what water is being used now, and then where are there current and future unmet needs. So in-stream needs, you know, what's currently needed and what is that demand, and where are there unmet needs there for municipalities currently and in the future, industry, ag, same thing. And then how do we bring those people together? How do we bring that information together and develop integrated solutions that no one entity can tackle alone, that yield multiple public benefits, that try to get at the complexity of managing these systems? And then documenting it in a plan, using that plan to align and leverage resources both at the local level, the state level, and in some instances the federal level. So really it's, you know, helping a community articulate their needs at these multiple levels, and hopefully giving some direction also to state agencies for how they can help them achieve objectives. So we are in the pilot phase of this program. We were successful in the 2015 session. We got $750,000 to distribute in the form of grants, as well as two staff positions, so that's paying for my time. And through this pilot phase, I'll get at the objectives here in a moment, but we have four different places around the state that are testing these guidelines, working with our agency and other agencies to kind of figure out what this means. It's a pretty organic, kind of messy process, but we're learning a lot. And the benefit of having this kind of cohort approach is that we are, you know, all these places are very different, but there are going to be some similarities that emerge. And how can we connect these different places around Oregon to just kind of further increase the voice that these communities have in terms of guiding the state in determining water needs? And connecting them to talk about lessons learned, the challenges that they're facing, how they're working through them, giving feedback to state agencies as we're going through the process. And so for us, you know, the pilot phase objectives to test these guidelines, gain some experience in integrated water planning at the local level to inform future statewide strategies, kind of giving some more concrete, tangible recommended actions that will assist local communities, inspire more cooperative approaches to water at the local level. You hear the old adage, you know, water's for drinking, or whiskey's for drinking, water's for fighting over. I personally wish that he had never said that, because I personally believe that water is something that we should be cooperating over. It's something that should bring people together, because it is the thing that connects us all. And we really, at every level, need to be doing a much better job at getting at that. Building local capacity and support for this type of coordination. You know, the work of coordination and collaboration is really never done. You never get to, you know, wipe your hands and walk away. This is ongoing work, and we really need strong communities, strong local leaders that, again, can kind of help articulate those needs and then align resources to make it happen with state agencies in a support role. And then thinking outside of the box, you know, what are those things that we're not doing, that we haven't done because we're all operating, you know, we're all just trying to get through and get our work done, but let's step back. Let's think outside of the box. Let's look at some innovative solutions that are happening, you know, in other communities in Oregon and other places, you know, across the nation, maybe even internationally. Maybe there's something that someone hasn't even thought of yet, but kind of capitalizing on this opportunity to think about creative solutions. And then leveraging additional resources. We, you know, at the state level, we'll probably never have a ton of money for this type of planning, and so we need to be creative about how we leverage resources from lots of different parties. The Midcoast, as you saw on the map, was one of the successful grantees from this. One of the things with the planning guidelines is you need to identify someone to convene the process. They need to be kind of in a neutral position, someone who can help bring out other people's voices to that collaborative process. And the city invited our department to co-convene with them. We don't quite know what this means yet, but that's kind of why we're in the pilot phase, is figuring out what that means, what that looks like. And we had four places, two that were awarded full funding and two that were awarded partial funding, with the idea that, you know, it's enough to get started and get going, and hopefully we'll be able to find additional resources either from, you know, at the state level or at other levels. And some of the themes, you know, that have emerged in our conversations is, how do we relieve the pressure on rivers and tributaries? A lot of people talk about the lower Siletz and kind of the multiple pressures on that system and how there are unmet needs for fish, but we need to be able to do that in a way that also satisfies these other needs. examining opportunities to kind of share water more effectively, or maybe reuse water, recycle it before it goes to the ocean, exploring some regional water supply options. So there's, you know, we're at the very beginning of this process, so we're really inviting kind of people's ideas, their interests and concerns, and then we'll have to work as a group to kind of hone in on those priority areas. But these are just some things that we've been hearing. And then I'm going to let Tim talk for a little bit about where we're at right now in terms of kind of next steps.
So there's a few things I think that are worth considering where we do not fit in the mold of the pilot planning process for water resources, in that if you notice the map that was shown previously, the pilot study areas are based around a basin, and the Mid-Coast is based on a region. And the reason for that, obviously, is obvious, is that we're pulling off of multiple water, micro watersheds all along basically Lincoln County, but our study area is Lincoln County and somewhat beyond that. And our boundaries of our study area are kind of ambiguous. And that was one of the challenges that we had, is we didn't quite know where to stop. And that, you know, the city of Newport, that, you know, started this process as the convener, and the reason that we were interested in doing so was because as we did our water planning, we started to bump into our neighbors who had also done their water planning, and their water planning never really considered our water planning, and our water planning never really considered theirs. And as we started to talk with people, we began to realize that everybody sort of fell into that same boat, not just municipalities, but watershed districts and the tribe and Georgia Pacific and all the other significant users of water in the Mid-Coast region. And it became really obvious to me and to the city of Newport that there was this lack of communication as it pertained to future water uses, both from a municipal perspective and others, and that the place-based planning exercise was kind of an excuse for people to get together and discuss those at a kind of another level and talk about how we could work together and kind of how our planning processes would impact somebody else's planning processes and vice versa. And so we're different. Right out of the gate, we're different. And I think Water Resources has recognized that the coastal area is just so wildly different than everybody else in how we handle water because our circumstance is different. And I think that is going to be a really interesting exercise. The second thing I wanted to point out was that the city was really intentional about asking Water Resources to be a co-convener because, you know, we could be very focused on our discussions about water planning and still completely miss the target that Water Resources really wanted us to hit when it came to integrated water planning. And so we thought it was really beneficial to kind of have an ace in the room, if you will, to guide this planning process so that we could fit within the integrated plan overall. And then that would be something that all of the organizations along the coast can use this plan, their future water planning, and provide some guidance about regional uses or regional impacts or regional needs. Or, you know, I know that, for example, Sea Rock Water District is looking at expanding their water sources. We're looking at expanding our water sources. The city of Yahoo is interested in that. The city of Lincoln City is interested in that. The city of Depot Bay is interested in that. And obviously we have a perspective, and I have a perspective from a municipal organization. But I have very little perspective on water from the watershed's perspective or the soil and water conservation's perspective or the tribe's perspective, and that's why I think this is a really helpful planning tool for me to understand when we're looking at future water rights somewhere, what the perspective of those other organizations are and their needs as well, and how would we possibly be able to partner in the future, you know, 5, 10, 30, 50 years down the road so that we're wisely using our water resources, and it's not every man for themselves.
Tim, let me ask you a question. Watershed councils, I thought, were formed to do this, and why isn't Newport? I mean, watershed councils were formed, a lot of people think, for salmon. They weren't. They were to really assess the water needs of the basin, even though it's smaller. In the case of Lincoln County, we have several small, different, separate groups. But why wasn't the city incorporated in with the watershed councils? Did the city not participate, or did they not get asked? Or because that's when we originally wrote the Oregon Salmon Plan, I thought that's what we were going to move for. I'm not attacking you, but I want to ask the question. Maybe you're not the people we should ask the watershed council why they didn't.
You know, we have not necessarily participated with the Watershed Council on a significant level other than water quality related issues. And I think that's been their primary focus, although it's not necessarily their only focus. And I think probably the better answer is just simply resources. They don't have resources to pull off a planning exercise of this level, but we pulled in Wayne from the Watershed Council immediately and helped us do outreach because we realized that that is where the institutional knowledge of the water resources on the coast really lies. But, you know, obviously their knowledge is limited to the internal planning of any other particular organization along the coast. And so, you know, we anticipate them being a significant player in this because that was really their focus and goal. You know, we actually were sort of requested if we would be interested in participating in this exercise. And so we were one of the co-conveners and the applicant for the grant, and that's really it. And it sort of places us in an unusual situation in that we obviously have an interest and an opinion about water on the coast. And so the way we set up our planning team is we have a third-party facilitator so that the city can step back and not be overly influencing on the outcome of the planning exercise. And so we have different groups within this planning exercise that will basically be the steering group on how what this outcome becomes. It's not so much the City of Newport anymore. We're just the people that hold the meetings at our facility and that have matched the initial funding for that. But the planning process, in theory, needs to take a life of its own. And the Watershed Commission is going to be a significant player in that because they sort of bridge everybody, if that makes any sense.
So let me ask this question then. Well, I've been involved with a lot of planning since I've been a county commissioner. Most of it goes on a shelf and becomes dusty. How do we prevent this process from becoming just another planning exercise? And we've seen so many of them, it's hard to get anybody to even go to a planning exercise. When you say planning exercise, I go, hold on, let me out of this one. How do we make this one? Because I agree with the city. It's critical for the city, but it's also critical for fish, and it's critical for the area's future. How do we make sure that this one doesn't become just another dusty planning exercise sitting on my shelf?
If I give you an answer to that right now, I think I'd be blowing wind up your skirt, because I think that's part of one of the organization's goals is to figure out how this plan becomes useful. And that's one of the things we need to talk about in one of our very first planning sessions is what are the strategies that are an outcome of this that are reasonable strategies that we can take and use and this plan becomes a useful plan. Because the difference between a planning exercise and a useful planning exercise is that a useful planning exercise gives you a concrete objective that you're working toward. So for example, in Public Works, we have a water system master plan that we did. And it's not just a document that sits on the shelf. It tells me what my priority projects are and where I should be investing my resources. And in a similar fashion, the place-based planning exercise in the Mid-Coast region needs to have strategies identified that are priorities, not just for a particular individual, but for a group as a whole, so that, for example, when the city pursues an opportunity like Rocky Creek, we have vetted that and discussed that opportunity and know what the expectations are of our neighbors in regards to that opportunity. Could be regional, could be we had to go out on our own. What are the implications for fish passage? What are the implications for the tribe? What are their approach going to be? And so plan might be, in some instances, an informative plan that gives us an idea about what the response to different organizations are going to be for any initiative toward water. Another outcome of the plan might be a specific strategy that says, you know, this region needs to pursue this action to get this outcome. And that has to be really carefully thought out because we don't want to just toss out strategies that are useless and it's going to sit on a shelf and become, you know, just another document. But those are the goals that we at the planning group for this exercise have, is to make this a useful document that not just Newport can use, but everybody within this region can use to inform their water planning. Part of it also is those organizations that are so small, some of which you dissolved today, that don't have the ability to do planning on their own and can use this as a tool to help them plan. Some of the small water districts that have, you know, two or three commissioners on their board and are working other jobs, they don't even realize the resources that are available to them. So setting the actual document, the plan itself aside, it's the process that I'm really excited about. It's the networking opportunities that it presents to those people that otherwise really don't have that opportunity to even know who their neighbors are and what resources are available to them. I'm going to use a specific example in that I got written in on the board of the Beverly Beach Water District, unbeknownst to me until I got the letter. And we were having a discussion one day about how to communicate with the people within the district if we had a water emergency. I said, well, the county has those tools already developed that you can make use of to communicate with those people. Well, I didn't know that. Well, that's a simple resource in communication of that resource that this planning exercise will allow us to kind of disseminate at a much larger level and allow those districts and boards and communities to be able to communicate with each other and hopefully maybe make lasting groups outside of this. I begin to discover there are groups that exist out there already, special district groups that we can participate in that I need to encourage my board to participate in. Also resource that they're not aware of and didn't know was available to them. That's part of the outcome of this. It's just simply the exercise of doing the planning process itself.
So I'm going to keep asking questions.
Absolutely. Yeah, these are great questions.
So, these kinds of group formations, the biggest challenge is usually getting people in the room. And the Oregon Salmon Plan, the only reason it got off the ground and was so successful in creating watershed councils was because we had a potential salmon disaster which was going to affect a lot of people. What's going to be your tool to convince, because you're not just talking municipal water districts, you're talking people that are part of regional water planning in all different areas. Then you've also got the timber industry, the mills, and all these things. You got to have some a gotcha thing to get them in the room. What's your a gotcha thing?
If you don't have a reason for them to want to be there, they're not going to show up.
Right.
Everybody has a lot of things.
They got to have something at stake.
Mm-hmm. So one of our core groups is going to, what's our new name for it now, our planning group?
The Midcoast Water Planning Group.
No. Our the group of the core people who are reaching back to their stakeholder group.
Coordinating committee.
So we have a coordinating committee. I apologize. We've changed the name trying to make it so they don't sound really weird. But the goal of the coordinating committee is to represent all the different interests in the Midcoast region. So we don't necessarily have to have every individual from every organization coming to every meeting all the time. It's an unrealistic expectation. But with this coordinating committee, we have these key stakeholders that are coming to talk together about common issues, and they will go back and seek input from their constituent group or their web serve or whomever they happen to be representing at that particular moment to get feedback from them to come back to that coordinating committee and talk about those issues. So they're not a lone voice, if you will, but they're representation of a larger group of individuals. So there's that coordinating committee. We are going to intending to have very specific focused meetings on very specific focused topics. And so I would not expect everybody to come to every meeting, but it's very likely they would come to the ones that are very specific to their needs. And so between the coordinating committee and having very specific and intentional topics with a specific outcome coming out of that meeting, we hope that people will find this worthwhile. One of the things that we will talk about at our very first meeting is what are the things that we need to discuss that will keep you interested and make you come to these meetings. Because it's going to be a challenge because everybody hates to go to planning meeting. I do too. Hate them with a passion, but it needs to be worthwhile. And if we drag this thing out forever, it will fall. It will fail. It has to have a really very specific, tangible outcome that is useful to them and that makes them feel like it's worthwhile for them to be there and participate.
Hey, let me ask you a question.
Yes.
What's the role that you see the county playing in this?
Well, so I think the county in all of these areas is going to play a huge role because you're kind of, especially in Lincoln County, you're at the scale, you know, you encompass, I think, the majority of what will inevitably be the planning area. And you, by your nature, are representing many people, many interests, and you're also at this really critical scale when it comes to execution. You know, this is going to take, you know, local support of, you know, folks in Tim's position. It's going to take county commissioner support. It's going to take, you know, state legislator support, and there's got to be alignment between these different, you know, between these different levels. It's not only kind of horizontal integration. We've really got to get this vertical integration so that, You know, say a proposal comes out of this, a very concrete proposal that, you know, this partnership wants to take to the legislature, they're speaking with one voice.
Now I'm going to ask the question of our lawyer. So,
yes, I drink.
I was told when I got this job, don't ever do anything without consulting with your lawyer. So I'll do it in public right here. Wayne, this is going to be a different kind of a challenge for us. We've never really taken it on at this level. We've kind of dumped it over to watershed councils to take it on. And you've been through this a little bit. How do we fit into this?
Well, first of all, I think the reason why the county hasn't taken more of a leadership role is we're not a purveyor of water. I mean, we're not actually one of the entities that exists out there that collects, stores, and distributes treats.
Yeah, but this isn't just about purveying water.
No, that's what I'm saying. No,
that's why up to now.
Up to now, why we haven't been as involved in that, because there's been other entities that had as a prime function as one of one of the things that they do, one of the services they provide, it is in water. So that hasn't been a focus of ours. Although we have been involved, obviously in our comprehensive plan, we address water needs countywide. We should note that Lincoln County is a little bit different than some other counties in that I think it's somewhere between 40% and 45% of the population actually in Lincoln County lives outside of incorporated areas. So, you know, we do have all these, that's why we have all these special districts that provide water. We have a number of community water systems. We're involved in actually assisting the state in either regulating or licensing work or checking some of those systems through our health department. And so we're actually involved in some level on this, but we've never been kind of the leader on the planning end. I think what we're seeing now is there's a recognition, and this is a great initiative. I'm actually very supportive of what the state is doing here, and I want to thank Newport for actually convening this. I think it's great to say that we got to bring all these various entities together, and what we can do, I think, is be a supporter of this. We, you know, you have some leverage, you have some ability to assist in making sure that people are at the table, including representatives from the county. Because this is going to take a process that's going to be wider than it has been in the past. And so I think we do have a direct interest in seeing what happens here.
So, would you mind if I actually comment on that as well? We actually had a discussion about what role does the county take in the big planning exercise. We talked about it at one of our meetings. And, you know, I've been thinking about that ever since. And if there's one thing that everybody in the planning region has in common is we all work under Lincoln County.
Right.
You know, we might not have anything else in common, but we all are within Lincoln County together. And, you know, the county actually plays a pretty significant role in water quality. You're monitoring septic systems. You know, we rely on you for preservation of our watersheds and making sure that septic systems are maintained and operating sufficiently within those watersheds. And that applies to an awful lot of organizations in this county. There's county health. You know, so I think what's going to happen is that we're looking at the county as kind of a bridge between all of us, and I would expect that we would probably come back to the commission at periodic points throughout our planning process and talk about where we're at and look for guidance to see if there's things that maybe we missed or maybe we need to evaluate more. It's kind of that overarching organization that covers all of us within the planning region, but also kind of down into the weeds and some of the specific topics that we might be talking about, like watershed protection and preservation. You know, one of our big concerns out of the Big Creek reservoirs is the different septic systems that are outside right up against our reservoir and how we handle that. You know, that might be the formation of districts to provide sanitary sewer service in some regions as a measure of watershed protection. I mean, that could be a strategy. Is it the development of sanitary sewer in some system? That could be an outcome of this report. You know, this particular watershed is at risk because of septic system that should have a public sewer system, and the county endorses that as a watershed protection measure, and it becomes a strategy out of the plan. That's an example.
But we don't do sewer.
No, I absolutely understand that.
And every time we've done sewer outside of the cities, it's come to bite us in the long run. So,
but,
well, that's getting clear.
You
wouldn't be the
purveyor
of that.
But indirectly, right, there's an influence there. That's because, you know, I read in the newspaper the other day that Depot Bay is looking at approving somebody to have a septic system within their municipal service boundary. Well, I was curious to see what the county's response to that eventually is going to be, because the reason they're in a municipal service boundary is to get rid of septic systems, you know. And so it's consistent messages from organizations at the county level and at the city level when it comes to water quality and water protection, is that that's important. And a plan, an outcome of a plan like this, is a collaborative approach toward addressing those issues. And if the county's not on board with that, the plan has failed from the beginning, because we didn't have a collaborative process.
Let me try to get down to some things in the country. One of the problems they're going to struggle with most of all is communication in their original, I don't care how good you are, you don't know Lincoln County as well as Casey Miller, our person. Is it possible for Casey to be involved in the original setup of the communication system?
We can assist with that.
Yes, Chapman. Absolutely.
Well, I'm trying to get to
that's on the record, right?
I can tell you now that you guys have been talking to Amy Chapman. So, for instance, the county does know representatives of a lot of the community water systems has can identify. So, to the extent that we can provide that kind of service to
we have the information that you need that can save you a lot of time and grief.
Absolutely.
And I was wondering, can we get that so that
absolutely.
Okay. Yeah, and that's you know, we're bringing people together to kind of identify those resources, that information, where people are committed, where they can bring resources to the table. And then also, you know, my job is really to try to, you know, connect the dots. You know, if someone says, I can do this or I need this, connecting them with things that they need, or just trying to facilitate, coordinate the process so that it continues to move forward and that people continue to derive benefits from it. But I'm really here kind of in service to the community and trying to coordinate at the state level, state agency support, and get people on board there so that, you know, and at the local level so that, again, there's just this kind of pathway for outcomes
We've got the information. We can give you that. Can be our part of our contribution to what you want. And Casey Miller is the person who houses that kind of information.
So it's a third. We've actually taken advantage of that already. All the special districts within the county got that information from the county to make sure that we could reach out to them in person, and we're not missing anybody. Because my real fear is we'll start this process and there's a significant player that we didn't even consider.
Oh, it always happens.
Our first planning step is actually the development of the communication plan and how we communicate within the planning organization itself, how we communicate the outcomes of our planning process to the community and to the state and to the organizations that are within that planning process. That's the very first part of this plan. And everybody in the pilot study is doing that exact same planning step. And so one of the things we will ultimately communicate as well is, you know, the city has matched 50% what the grant award was just on our own resources, but this is not the city of Newport's plan. So at some point we need buy-in financially from organizations who are participating in this as well. We are actively looking at other grant funds that are out there to help facilitate this process. And this planning process could last, you know, 2 or 3 years till we finally get to the end and have, you know, an outcomes from this. And so I think it's going to be an organic process. It's going to develop over time to meet the needs of this particular region. And again, back to the region, we have 1 million little micro watersheds in this region, and they're not dissimilar from each other, with the exception of maybe the Celeste and some of the bigger ones, but most of the water sources are not coming from the Celeste. They're coming from all these micro watersheds, and how do we handle that? They're all trout bearing streams. They're all, you know, we have a really unique situation here on the coast. Very unique.
Well, my experience, one of the things that is the death blow is if you take too long.
I agree with you 100%.
If you take too long getting this up and going and getting through, it will just kind of crumble out from underneath you. Mm-hmm. You've got to move fast, fairly, and you may get an advantage in that people today are worried about global warming and more water demands here on the West Coast. So we have emergencies or potential emergencies facing us that
should make people a little more active to try to get involved.
Yeah, getting back to the question about the driver of this, you know, everyone I'm talking to, like, they felt the pressure the past 3 years. And it's either, like, you know, and maybe there will be several great years and, you know, people will stop feeling the pressure. But I think people know now, like, that is a possibility. It's of concern. You know, our department is regulating off people that don't even know that they have a water right. We're seeing, you know, curtailment that we've never seen before on the coast. And it's, you know, if not kind of managed at this phase in a cooperative manner, these kinds of things just lead to conflict. And we'd really love to figure out, you know, how do we get resources towards a good direction versus just managing perpetual conflict. And that would necessarily go here, but that's what we see in other
we don't want to become another plan.
Well, to address your current concerns about longevity of the planning process, we have to be sensitive because I think it's unlikely we're going to get a lot of people to be able to come to meetings all the time because they're going to be long. You know, so we're looking at holding large stakeholder meetings every couple of months. And you have a series of meetings with a very specific end time and goal in mind. And then you move into the next phase of your plan. And that takes some time simply because you can't have meetings right on top of each other. And there's a lot of information to talk about. And we're not going to be able to get into a great deal of detail on any particular topic, which we may have to form a subgroup to talk about those at that point in time if it warrants a lot of detailed discussion. But we have to stay at a bit of a high level because there are so many things that are going to need to be discussed as part of this, but it also needs to be useful. And if you stay up at 100,000-foot view, you're going to have a 100,000-foot strategy, you know, and that's not useful. You know, we have to identify what the most important topics are and spend time on those most important topics. And although there are other important topics, we call them our parking lot, where there's a topic that's important, but it doesn't necessarily warrant the discussion of the entire group, and we're going to set that in our parking lot and come back to that maybe at a group meeting where they can talk about that in detail and then come back at a higher level to the larger organization and incorporate that back into the plan.
So one last question.
Okay.
I'll get up on the subject. And that's your communication with ODF&W, because they become an absolutely critical player in this whole process. How much communication or have you been talking to your regional ODF&W?
Yeah, so I've had a conversation with John Spangler and also
John Spangler and Ken Lofinkt.
And Ken Lofinkt.
Who's our regional water, fish and wildlife guy.
Okay.
And so they're engaged, they're coming to the kickoff meeting and they're planning to be a part of this process, as is DEQ. And we've also been working at the state level with the water program at the state level to make sure that, you know, when groups come back with information requests, that, you know, there's a pathway for that within the institution to go grab that information and bring it back to the planning process. And I know that, you know, they're seeing greater and greater pressure on the in-stream needs for fish, and that's something they're really hoping, you know, they can bring to this process and get some kind of local buy-in on what fish need.
All right. Yeah. Excellent presentation. Thank you. Good discussion. Very important. And we look forward to hearing reports of progress.
Thank you so much for your time.
The last little plug, which is on here, but it's tiny. So we have our kickoff meeting on September 29th from 4 to 7 p.m. You all, of course, are welcome.
We'll have representatives there.
Great.
Yes.
And we look forward to future.
Where is that meeting going to be?
At City Council.
It's going to be in the City Council Chambers of City Hall.
And time
in Newport.
Yep. 4 to 7 p.m. on the 29th of September.
All righty. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Okay. We move on to commissioner reports. And I want to mention that I'm going to be gone for next week's meeting, but Commissioner Hunt will be back. I'm going to be attending a two-day leadership academy in Bethesda, Maryland, one of only 18 people that were selected for this. And just up front, I want everybody to know I'm not traveling on the county's dime. It's totally funded by a private foundation that really wants to move the needle on better solutions to the problem of people with mental illness and addictions and the public safety system, and certainly that's a national problem. It's a local problem. It's a state problem. Yesterday, wearing my hat as vice president of Association of Oregon Counties, I was at a meeting at the Oregon Health Authority where there were representatives of some of the counties that are the heaviest utilizers of the state hospital, the aid and assist population. These are the people who are arrested and very often for very petty misdemeanor type crimes that the defense attorney files a motion that the person is not able to aid and assist in their own defense, so they end up being shipped over to the state hospital. Costs $1,000 a day to have somebody there. Average length of stay is 64 days. All of that comes out of the state general fund. So basically the message from Lynn Saxton, the director of Oregon Health Authority, was we could provide an entire year of housing and treatment for those folks for less than $64,000, keep them out of the justice system entirely in some cases, or at least lessen the interactions. So we've got to find a path to put the things in place that we know will work to do that and to do it more quickly.
So I'm going to ask you a question.
Yes, sir.
On the subject.
Can sure, of
you
course.
You're talking about the state hospital.
Yeah.
The state hospital has experts in
right.
behavioral health and,
right.
and treatment. You know, supposedly the best doctors in the area.
Mm-hmm.
We have a problem here, if we were to do it at the regional level, we have a problem retaining mental health people in this area through our health department and in general the doctors. So how would we may be able to do it for a lot less money, but can we supply the type of services that they need that the state hospital offers?
That's going to be a huge challenge, and that was acknowledged. I mean, even the bigger counties were spreading the message that I chimed in with from the rural perspective, and they've heard it from others as well, is that staff recruitment, staff retention are huge barriers. If we're going to have the capacity to offer treatment at the local level, we really need to be able to pay for it. And it's not just counseling, but you know, a whole range of things in terms of supportive housing, crisis centers, day centers, things that can keep a person from the kind of situation where they ever, you know, commit the loitering, the public nudity, the kind of disruptive things that end up getting them arrested, sitting in our jails, and then being shipped over to the state hospital in the first place. It's really, I think, a prevention strategy and a diversion strategy. And there was acknowledgement that it's not easy. It's going to take a lot of upfront investment. But on the other hand, there are counties, some of the bigger counties, that do have more resources. You know, they're doing things that are working. They're starting to move the needle. Other counties, other states are making more headway on this than Oregon is. So, again, it's not creating things out of whole cloth, but taking models and programs that work and figuring out how to make them work in Oregon. And yes, you're right, Commissioner Thompson, that being able to competitively attract and then retain mental health professionals, that's a huge piece of it. And at least I heard an acknowledgement from the top yesterday that they know that's an issue. So,
okay, well, I'll pass.
Okay. Public comment now. Constituent input. I saw that one person did sign up, so if you'd like to come forward at this time, you've got up to 5 minutes to address us on any topic.
On any topic. Very good.
Yes.
And
if you'd introduce yourself first.
My name is Shandy Voiles, and we have kind of an ongoing situation that has a new wrinkle. My appeal was just came down and they reversed and remanded on counts 15 through 18, which means my horses that were unlawfully seized are recognized as having been unlawfully seized. And I want the animals that were unlawfully seized to be returned. So far, the animal control people are maintaining their obstructive posture, and they need some supervision. So I really want
Mr. Belmont
to talk and boil out of the outside of this.
Okay. If you've got some time.
Sure. Okay. We'll do that.
All righty.
Okay. Thank you for coming. All righty. We do not have an executive session on the agenda, correct, Mr. Belmont?
You're not.
All right. Next meeting of the Board of Commissioners next Wednesday, September 21st, 6 p.m., a joint work session with the Toledo City Council at Toledo City Hall, and following that, the regular Board of Commissioners agenda. Until then, we're adjourned.